Welcome to Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their games and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, your host today and always, and your friendly local indie enthusiast. Apologies for the delay in releasing episodes. Our interview with Becky Anderson and Josh Fox fell through due to illness, and to boot, I've been super busy recently. But today, here's my interview with my longtime friend Harrigan, someone with whom I've played dozens of play-by-post games over the last 8 years or so. Harrigan is also massively into the OSR scene, something he describes as old-school play reimagined. For Harrigan, it's like the idealized version of that style of classic play, so you get to combine the lovely old tropes with almost 50 years of evolved RPG thinking. Now that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie. So, today we're talking to Harrigan. Hi there, Harrigan, and welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Marks. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. I think it was about 3 years ago when you and I sort of thought, oh, maybe we should start a podcast, but we never did get around to that, actually.
No, you're right. There are three of us, I think, and you are off to the races and have been quite successful.
Well, moderately successful, you know, I'm getting there now. Harrigan, would you like to take a minute to introduce yourself and let us know what you do in indie tabletop role-playing games?
I can do that. It'll be short. You know, there's not a lot I do on the creator end of things, but I consume an awful lot of indie tabletop role-playing games, run and play, and not just indie, but all sorts of games, as I think you and I have played play-by-post games previously before, so you know what types of games that I'm into. But I don't know, I guess about 3 or 4 years ago, like many in the hobby, I've got a variety of different nerd interests, and I decided to really sort of double down on the role-playing, the tabletop end of things. So I've done that, and I run a lot of games online, play a lot of games online, do lots of play-by-post and that sort of thing. I have creative aspirations, and I do a lot of like sort of homebrew stuff or my own take on things. And when I retire, I fully intend to actually start publishing and writing things up formally. So we'll see where that goes.
Oh, well, I hope you do. That sounds really fun. The retirement part of that is the bit that I need.
Sounds like a dream, doesn't it?
I mean, I have to get there first, so... Harrigan, you and I met on a play-by-post forum something like, I'm going to say, 10 years ago, which is kind of wild.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about play-by-post and, you know, why that format is attractive to you as a role player?
I certainly can. 10 years ago, 8 years ago, it's something like that. It's been a long time.
You're keeping
time.
Better track than me.
Yeah. The only reason why I say that is that I don't think Tavern Keeper and some of those other sites have been around quite that long. And that, I think,
oh, fair. Yes. I think our experiences are quite similar because I left university. I didn't have a regular group. And somebody said, oh, let's run a game. We'll run it remotely. And like we can run it over Skype when we want to, which never happened, actually. And here's this website I'm using. It's called Tavern Keeper. And I kind of never really looked back. And I ran a couple of games there that were really, really good and really in-depth. And it really got me hooked. And I didn't have any other outlet for role-playing at the time. And it was just a really, really good way to get into it and to be able to do it regularly, like wherever I was, whenever it was, you know, useful. Like you said, if you're working a lot, if you're on the road a lot, it's really useful to just be able to zone out and do something creative every now and again. And I think that's kind of the perfect outlet for a weird nerd like me. So, you know.
Much the same. I will say that, you know, even beyond the ability to kind of pick up and play, you know, it's an asynchronous way to play, right? Not everybody's online at the same time and all that good stuff. There are other benefits as well. The games can play quite differently, right? You can really get into pretty deep characterization. You can get into pretty deep description and intricate plotting, more so than I think at a live table. And I don't want to pretend that one is better than the other. I'll often tell people, though, if they ask me if I had to give up either playing by post or playing live, I actually would rather play by post because I've got for about 20, 25 years, it's the only way that I played. It was only in 2019 that I decided to really kind of come back to live tables and go to cons and that sort of thing.
That was a bad time to come back, Harrigan.
Well, you know what? I only got to, I think I got to three local cons, and then the pandemic hit. And you say it was a bad time to come back, but it really wasn't, because everyone moved online. So I've had no trouble finding games to play over Discord or Zoom or Roll20 or Foundry or whatever. So I've played dozens and dozens of games in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years.
I mean, of those three formats then, which one is your, you've said the Play by Post is your favorite, but does that count? Playing online in different formats as well, like over Zoom or...
I really wouldn't want to give up any of these, to be honest with you. But I would say that I get the most out of Play by Post, right? I've got just lots of experience with it. I know what kind of what I like. Play by Post really lets you also explore a ton of different games.
Yeah.
The right places to play will attract sort of the niche audience. So you'll find people who are interested in the same little corner games that no one else plays otherwise, right?
So
it's really good for that. So I would put that at the top of the list. I love playing live. I love the, like, around a table, the social part. You can see everyone's faces, expressions. Yeah. There's camaraderie, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
But I will admit, I really do like playing over Foundry or Zoom or playing virtually as well, because it's so easy, because no one has to travel. You kind of sit down at your desk and you flick it on and you play and go from there.
Yeah.
And with the quality of video and whatnot these days, you get most of the experience from a live table. Not quite all of it, but you get a lot of it.
I agree. Like, I really like sitting around the table less so nowadays, because it's hard to travel. It's sociable and it's nice, you know, you pass snacks around. And I think that aspect is really nice, but there's something about getting into really deep character building introspective play that you get from Play by Post that you really can't get from any other format, because it's not really socially acceptable. I really like that, and it's a lot deeper. It feels very, very creative in a way that is maybe slightly more selfish and self-centered than other formats let you be, but that's kind of fine. Because you can write as much as you want, basically, and, you know, you're not under any obligation to...
There's some etiquette. Exactly. So if you're writing 10 pages at a time, people will get tired of that.
They will get annoyed with you.
Yeah, but there's a happy medium, right? One-liners will also tend to put people off. If you're not very engaged in the game, you're not really, you know, adding anything to it.
I think it depends on who you're playing with. Like, the website, like you said, is really important. Like, I think rpol.net has a kind of reputation for running more traditional games, whereas when we started on Tavern Keeper, 5th edition wasn't out.
Yeah.
And most people, I think, were playing Fate to begin with. I think that was...
Yeah, there was a ton of that.
Massive part of why I joined, because it was so Fate and indie RPG intensive. And obviously that massively appeals to me, but it was really cool to see that audience develop and then gradually sort of shift back, I think, to a bit more of traditional gameplay over time.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like now, because I haven't browsed for a while, but there were a lot of 5th edition and Pathfinder games going down there the last time I was kicking around.
There still are. I would say that Tavern Keeper and Gamers Plane are still the two places, though, that probably, I don't know, must be a third of the games or more are independent or small press. So there's
That's still lots and lots of
Powered by the Apocalypse, true indie games that have their own little system, story games, that kind of thing.
Mm.
One last comment on sort of the strength of the medium, and you kind of hinted at it. I think that many of us are better writers than we are actors, more comfortable getting into a different character's skin in the written format than we are around a table. Maybe some groups are not like that, but mine are certainly that way. I find it, Mark's, way easier to maintain tone in a play-by-email game.
Yeah.
So if you're playing a horror game or a game where it's serious, a lot of games around a table can kind of slide by default into a bit of a Monty Python kind of mind space, which I love, but it's not the only way that I want to play. Right.
Yeah.
There's lots of things you want to emulate. And I think Play by Post makes it really easy to do that, because you can have the equivalent of a session zero up front to talk to people about what you're after, what you all as a group decide you want to do. And it's pretty easy to maintain that versus at a table when people have all the other distractions and whatnot.
I agree. The Monty Python thing is kind of the classic. What happens if you get a bunch of nerds sitting around a table?
It is.
Talking to each other. It will ultimately end up in somebody referring to the Knights of Ni. It's an inevitable outcome of the format, I suppose.
It is.
But like you said, it's really interesting to get more into character through Play by Post. I mean, we've played quite a lot of different systems together. Do you think there's a particular style of system or a set of mechanics that work better for Play by Post?
I do, but I'll put a big caveat up front. I've seen people run virtually everything successfully in the format, including the crunchiest, most detailed, most tabletop focused games of all. So Pathfinder and right on through, you know, Rollmaster, on all sorts of old school stuff that just has
You've
all
never
this.
Seen someone play Rollmaster through a play by post. You've got to be kidding me.
I have. Wow. And yeah. And I, you know, successfully, you know, can be, depends on how you look at it. But I will say, like on the Paizo forums, for example, for Pathfinder, there's tons of people playing
full-on
Pathfinder, full-on, and they're playing by post. But they're playing a certain way, and they're also very diligent, right, about it. So all that aside, you know, to answer your question, I absolutely think that there are some characteristics of certain games that really make them friendly to play by post. And that's the generally the more system light, minimal type thing where you can kind of, you know, you have lots of room to explore and write and do the scene and do the character and everything else without having a ton of mechanics in the way. One of the bigger things to look out for, I think, is when you do engage with the mechanics, both on the GM and the player side of things, or even if it's a GM-less game, the number of transactions that you need, so the number of communications back and forth between the individuals around the, you know, quote-unquote, the table, if that's a high number, that really can bog the game down. Because if you think about it, even if people are posting once a day, if there are six players or five players, and they all have to wait for one another to kind of put their two cents in, it can really sort of be a bit of a tripwire.
Mm-hmm.
So mechanics that allow people to sort of just roll and then go with the with whatever the result is, whether they the game gives them the agency that they need, or the mechanics actually say, if you succeed, the player narrates, that sort of thing, can really work wonders, as opposed to the GM has to set a difficulty, the player makes a roll, and now the GM has to make a reactive roll. Now you have to talk about what meta currency someone wants to spend. Like I said, all these things can work quite well, but the more sort of the little components you add in, the more intricacies, it can really slow things down.
Yeah.
I find systems like the Black Hack, Tiny Dungeon, stuff where it's like roll the dice and then get on with it type of thing can really work well in
play-by-post games. Like Power by the Apocalypse is a good example here, because that gives you a lot of player agency. And I think that kind of culture of the player has a lot of narrative agency and the GM is kind of there as a sort of facilitator.
Totally.
That makes for a much more rewarding experience, but I think you kind of have to telegraph this to your players in advance. And if they're used to playing things like Dungeons and Dragons, Pathfinder, the classic dungeon mastered, game mastered systems, then you are going to struggle, because they're not going to be used to having that kind of agency over their own characters and of the world around them, which can be a bit of a challenge. I think one of the games that we sort of had disputes about in the past was Blades in the Dark, which feels like a Powered by the Apocalypse game, but in practice is like there's a lot of back and forth between the players and the GM in that game, and that can really, really slow things down in play by post. In fact, when I have tried in the past, it has been effectively unplayable because it's so slow. It shouldn't be slow. It's a system that doesn't work if it's slow. Like Dungeons and Dragons is kind of fine if it's slow. It's not a big deal. Like combat can take forever and like who cares, it's fine. But if Blades in the Dark is slow, it's really boring. That game unfortunately just falls a little bit flat.
It's a classic example of what I was talking about with what the GM is supposed to set position and effect before every single roll, and then there are partial successes that you have to think about, and then there are what do you do with the stress, how do you handle it, you know, do you take harm or do you take stress, and all those decisions, those are all the transactions I'm talking about. And you know what, if I may, there's one Powered by the Apocalypse game which is kind of a perfect example of I think what works well and what doesn't necessarily work all that well. And I will say, by the way, that I personally think the moveless Powered by the Apocalypse game, so everything down the World of Dungeons pathway, they work phenomenally well, because you're not even picking moves and you're not even picking results from moves, which can really help some people. But it can also, if you have players who are just comfortable with the genre and just kind of know how to roll with it, that type of stuff can sing.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah, the game I wanted to mention is Masks. And, you know, I think probably lots of your listeners are familiar with Masks and, you know, classic Powered by the Apocalypse games that, you know, I think everyone who has a modern mindset towards gaming understands that, boy, even though it's not really a supers game, it's actually about identity and about authority and being a teenager and all that good stuff. The supers rules in that game are incredibly effective. So there's no like weird power scales. No one's worrying about who can lift more or throw more or run faster. It's all just baked in narratively into the moves, which are amazing. So the game works super well. And then you get to one mechanic which bogs things down, and that is team. In that game, everyone has a little bit middle meta currency where they can help each other, right? So picture you're playing and all three characters are involved in like an action scene. And there's a point where the GM will often say, this person failed with their role or it's a partial success. Does anyone want to spend team to help them? And then suddenly the gears are like,
Yeah, now you
have to wait for every player to weigh in and say, I am or I am not going to spend team.
Yeah.
It's kind of a perfect example of where you need to look out, be on the lookout for that kind of mechanic.
You know, there's always workarounds that make things flow a little bit easier or flow a little bit better. Like when I used to run Fate, I just tell people what the difficulty was in advance and just let them do their own roles and narrate their own outcomes and not like, you know, try and step back as much as possible. But at some point, you know, you are going to come to this point where it just stalls and it stops. Play by Post has a notoriously high kind of sudden termination rate. Like if you imagine when you're playing at a table with your friends, you know, maybe you'll have a couple of sessions which don't go so well. And then you'll say, well, let's try playing something else in Play by Post. If it stops, that's it. It's dead. It's never coming back. And like quite often that happens in the first scene of the game. Everyone's really excited to make their characters and build the world. And then you try and play it. And then like, I'm just going to flake out now.
Either the first scene or during character generation. It's, you know, let's be honest, the hit rate is pretty low with Play by Post games for a game that will be successful over the long term because people get busy in their other life and they forget they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't have the right chemistry and they don't mix well together. There's all sorts of reasons why things can kind of go awry.
Yeah, it's a shame, but it's kind of, you know, it's very easy to pick up and start a new game. So it's kind of like that. Keep throwing until something sticks. That's the kind of approach that I used to take anyway. And I did get some absolute gems. And like you and I had some fantastic games. And shout out to a bunch of cool people on the Tavern Keeper forums, for instance, Dr. Babylon, who was just an amazing role player for so long.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Alfred, who's a cool person.
Yep.
Richard, who's been on the podcast before, very cool person on the From the Plus One Forward podcast. A bunch of other amazing people as well who became very, very fast friends for a short period of time. And it's kind of sad. I don't play games with them anymore. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, there's a bunch of really good players over there for sure. And some, quite frankly, some incredible writers. You know, I've got some sort of personal friends that I've developed from, you know, there's one guy, Dirigible, if you know
oh,
him.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I have played Play by Post games with Dirigible since about 2004 or something.
Oh, wow.
He sometimes will up and vanish for a while. And I'm like, I don't care. He'll come back. And the games that we play together are amazing.
And we really do hope that he comes back. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm actually playing with him now. He's running a fantastic Rats in the Walls game right now that I'm playing.
Oh, so cool, yeah.
You develop these relationships, so you understand, you know, sometimes people need a break from the game or what the pace might be and that sort of thing. I will say that if people are new to the format, it can be a frustrating format to get into and have some successes at.
Yes.
You know, you'll probably have five misses before you get one game where you're like, wow, that was incredible, right?
And even that won't last forever. I mean, you know, it's kind of that thing. The ideal length is not a full campaign. You know, the ideal length is like what you might consider to be a mini campaign, you know, at the table stuff, which will probably take you 6 months to a year to play. But so
absolutely
rewarding.
It will.
Yeah.
It will. And you know what? It's one of the places where I think the small press and indie games can really excel because a lot of them are about something specific, right?
Yeah.
They're
about
a thing that you are exploring with these characters. I totally agree with you. Like a lot of the D&D games and the, you know, all that stuff, even the OSR games. And, you know, I'm a big OSR fan, but that stuff, it starts up. If the GM isn't upfront about how long it's going to last and what the kind of what the scope is, it's like, man, you're kind of asking for trouble, just making it open-ended. Instead, talk about, we're going to do this. And, you know, this is how far we're going to get, how long we're going to play, what we're going to cover. I'll say this. I have a whole bunch of games now that I consider kind of episodic. And I put them on the shelf and take them off the shelf when I want to play them again. There's a superhero game I've run since the mid-90s through about three or four different groups of people over multiple systems. And I'm about to roll out sort of the next iteration of it soon.
Oh,
it's all in the same world.
I've heard about this. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to doing that again. But that just open-ended stuff where it's just, you know, where is this going kind of thing. And these games can take so long to play. It's good for people to have some sort of boundaries up around what the expectations are.
I think it's really interesting that you say kind of indie and story gaming is really good for this because often these games are now focused on like short campaign or even single session play. And that's really interesting kind of space to see where indie games can be more focused towards play-by-post format. I mean, there's like a couple of games that are actually written for that.
I've certainly seen a few that have either been written with play-by-post sort of in mind or as an option type of thing, and they have some advice around it.
Yeah.
I'll say this, and you probably haven't seen this because you haven't been as active in play-by-post lately, and you've been, you know, you've got the podcast right. And kids and all kinds of stuff going on, right? There's another site that I'm playing on right now. You know, a lot of the indie games that come up there are like one, they're meant to be like a one shot, like a single scenario. And Marks, sometimes they play in a month and they're done. And it's really cool.
I'm not joking. That's stressful.
I'm not joking. People have to be on top of it. You've got, you know, all four or five players who are all like vested, like we're all gonna post daily, but we're gonna get this knocked out. Like people, I just finished a Halloween game last year and we started it in September and we finished it in like mid-November or something like that.
Bonkers.
So we just blasted through. It's pretty cool.
Shout out to which website that is. Is that Gamers Plane?
That's gamersplane.com.
I'm going to have to check it out because I've heard a lot of good things about it. And like yourself, I'm quite picky about what games I play and what the format looks like. Like I love Tavern Keeper because it's clean and looks very pretty and is really nice.
Yep.
Arpol, not a big fan. looks very late 90s and it doesn't inspire me to write, even though it has amazing tools. It has really, really good tools. And like, it's got a massive community.
Yep.
Not always a community that I get on with, and they're not always interested in the same things as me, but it does have a massive community.
It does.
So yeah, I am fussy.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. RPOL.net is kind of the epitome of like function over form. You know, it's like lots, every feature you'd ever want, but oh boy, it's hard to use on a phone. And
it's impossible to use on a phone. I think it's great that there are still people making these websites because it's such an accessible way to play. And, people should try it. It's really fun. And I honestly think that creators out there, if you are interested in exploring a fruitful void, if you like, design games for play-by-post because you will find a market.
Yeah, absolutely. You're familiar with Alice is Missing?
Yes, definitely.
So Alice is Missing plays almost like a play-by-post game, but it's synchronous. So it's in real time. We played it over a Discord server, and it worked fabulously. So I do think the play-by-post is also evolving and becoming, sometimes there's the classic forum-style play that you and I are talking about here, but there's lots of people who are now playing, on Friday night, at 5 o'clock, we're all going to meet online and we're going to blast through via chat or text messages, essentially. So it's kind of a different take on the same thing.
Yeah.
Some people even get onto platforms like Roll20 so they can have the character sheet and they can have the map and all the stuff that they get from a VTT,
but they
don't get on video and they don't talk. They work in the chat.
That's amazing. Like for two, three years, I used to play an MU asterisk. I don't really know how you say that. A Mux.
Yep.
Online. I can't remember if you were into Muxes back in the day.
I played at the time, I think it was a MUD back in the early 90s at the university I was going to graduate school for. But you know what? Because of the real-time nature of that, I never got into those.
Mm.
But man, must be 25% of hardcore play-by-post people came from that MUD MUX world, for sure.
That's typically like a slow, synchronous format. And
yeah,
that's really fun. I played that Pathfinder, and that worked really well because you can track everything like with a character sheet, which is really helpful. But it's also kind of it's just a nice way to play because it's pretty chilled out. I used to run games from work. Shh, don't tell anybody. And that was that was really fun because you could just kind of set stuff going and people would run these cool little encounters, cool little dungeons, and just have this kind of a nice time, but also be chatting in the out of character channels and stuff like that. And it was just really chilled out in the kind of way that a Discord server, and I imagine Discord games are not, because they're more focused and you know that people are giving it more attention. So I think that's really interesting as well. Like that's the kind of middle ground between fully synchronous play and asynchronous play is.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought about that.
It used to be really fun. And like everybody who was on there was at work, you know, was the best.
Yeah.
They were all just like looking at their phones. And like, yeah, I'm imagining I'm in a fantasy world right now. That's fantastic.
Better than the button pressing or whatever their job is, right?
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the things that you have introduced me to some extent, is the OSR. And I wasn't really that into OSR games before. And then I think we did sort of play a few together, but you are much more into that scene than I am. You know, what are the current trends looking like in the OSR movement?
it's really just an explosion of content at this stage. You have to look at it a couple different ways. The classic stuff that people think of often are like retro clones and that kind of thing. So they tie it to old school D&D, either original D&D from the 70s, the basic or, you know, BX type stuff, or even Advanced Dungeons and Dragons when they get into the early 80s, really like an emulation of that stuff. And I'm actually not interested in that at all. I played that stuff back in the day, and I have no interest in going back to those sort of disjointed mechanics. And I don't know, some of the stuff in some of those that's baked into some of those systems just isn't for me. Rapidly, that movement, the whole OSR movement, turned into, you know, what about newer ways to approach the same sort of content or the same feel of exploration focused stuff, rulings over rules, emphasizing player skill, lethality in the game being something that really kind of drives the play. So you have to really have to worry about sort of the actions that you're taking as your character. So a lot of that stuff to me is central to the sort of the thesis of the OSR. But then you have the Black Hack and Into the Odd and just all these more modern systems that bring current gaming DNA to bear, and they either have a really lovely, like, minimal take on things, or they make everything very unified. So, you know, for those who know those old systems, the thief skills are percentile often, or 1-in-6, 2-in-6 style, versus a d20 for attacking and a d20 for saves, which is a different lookup table and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
The modern systems take all that stuff and they kind of bundle it together and reformat it and rejigger it a little bit. And you have the same things are important in the game, but you have these much leaner, easier to use and consume and internalize, at least for me, mechanics. But I guess the last thing I would say, just the content creation, like the people who are creating the OSR right now, must be about, I don't know, five or seven years ago when Powered by the Apocalypse really became big, right? You know, it seemed like everybody and their brother was making a game. There was this explosion of content. I wasn't super into Powered by the Apocalypse games at the time. And I remember being a little bit like, I felt like I was on the outside looking in, like, oh man, look at all that cool stuff over in the PBTA community. I feel that way about the OSR right now. Like, people who do zines and who do their own systems and who do, one of the core qualities is also like this, the cross compatibility of the content. Everything has hit dice. It's all based on, you know, there's an armor class thing and all that kind of stuff. All those basic components are there. What it means is that, you know, it's gone from a bunch of grog nerds who were cranky about wanting to play the old way because they were frustrated with 3.5 and the feats and the way those games are being run, and it's turned into this explosion of people who are injecting weird fantasy and cool sandbox rules and just all their own ideas. So it's just this landscape you can't even begin to get your arms around anymore. It's super cool.
Do you have any current favorites that, you know, that you're itching to try out or that you have tried out and are super?
There's fun? A whole line from the Black Hack now that has been developed, and that's starting to happen from Into the Odd as well. So I look at those as sort of core games that are branches that are, things are exploding from them, whether it's like Barbarians of the Aftermath, which is like a Thundar the Barbarian style post-apocalyptic game, which is based in the Black Hack.
Ooh, fun.
Or all of, I'm going to butcher his last name here, I think it's Diogo Nogueira out of Brazil. Diogo has a whole slew of games he's set up based on the Into the Odd stuff. You know, there's a zombie apocalypse game, there's a cyberpunk game, there's a space horror game that he put out, I think, a year or two ago. And they're just, the mechanics are just so light and lovely. That stuff, Chris McDowell's stuff from Into the Odd is, you know, he dispenses with to hit rolls. He dispenses with just everything except for saving throws and damage. The games are basically like play smart. Right. And if something is super risky to you, you might have to roll a saving throw. And if you choose to engage in any kind of conflict or combat,
that's on you. Yeah.
The damage dice just start flowing. Right. So it's just a different like mindset you bring. And Diogo and others have really, you know, Cairn also, that and Knave kind of, you know, Into the Odd and Knave have combined into Cairn. And then there's Mouse Ritter, which is based on Into the Odd.
Oh, I'm waiting for my Mouse Ritter box set. Actually.
Yeah. Yep. So all that stuff just really excites me.
Yeah.
But I won't even pretend, though, to be fully up to speed on where all the OSR stuff is going. I've kind of had to take a breath.
I don't think anybody can, you know. It's a big old church to embrace now, like you said. And
it is.
There's a lot going on. Like, Into the Odd, Troika, Electric Bastion Land, all of those cool things. Knave and Cairn, really fun. And like, there's a lot of OSR solo games being developed now, which are kind of
tons, really good. Tons and tons.
And really, it's another fruitful void for people to try and develop into. So
yeah, let me pitch you one more idea about the OSR, and that's really, I think, coming along, which is the British OSR, right? So I mentioned before that most of the OSR was initially the germ of all that is, you know, original Dungeons and Dragons, right? Old school play from the 70s, especially.
Yeah.
But now you've got people who are brewing up ways to do Warhammer content, who are looking at fighting fantasy and advanced fighting fantasy.
That's really interesting, because the other week I spoke to the main writer for Ariane Games, who has the license for advanced fighting fantasy. And like, genuinely, I had very little interest before I spoke to him. And now I'm like, oh, actually, do you know what? That is a cool system. I need to check that out.
It really is. I mean, it's Troika, basically, right?
Right.
Troika's taken directly from that. But the part that I like so much from advanced fighting fantasy that's infected a whole bunch of other indie games. I'll give one more shout out, actually. Rangers of the Middenvale is a fabulous knave-based, you know, sort of a dark fantasy exploration hex crawl type of game. But it takes from advanced fighting fantasy, Troika does, and then there's a couple of others recently.
Yeah.
What they do, Marks, is they bring in this idea of simultaneous combat. So whenever, Warlock by Greg Saunders, and that's one of my favorite OSR games right now is Warlock. It's basically a way to play old school Warhammer content without the complexities of that system. So it's profession-based and all that sort of stuff. There's a rat catcher and all that kind of stuff, right?
That sounds fun.
But the piece they take from fighting fantasy is this idea of when you engage in combat with someone, whoever rolls higher deals damage, which immediately raises the stakes on everything, and it speeds combat fantastically. So there's a real theme running through certain OSR games right now where they're all picking that up, saying, here's a way to speed up melee combat without having to have a lot of the whiffing and all the, you know, the boring part of D&D.
Well, the Black Hack as well is another British game.
Into the Odd, the Black Hack,
Electric Bastion Land, there's a few Troika.
Of them. Yep.
All of those games.
There's a bunch of them.
That's really interesting. I don't know if there's something in that, but, you know, I always thought that it was quite interesting that OSR felt like a counterculture against the PBTA movement, how story games sort of fell out the forge, and like OSR is much a kind of counterculture to that. And that is interesting, and normally I'd be all for that, but I just love story games too much. So.
I think that's true, and it's not. In some ways, they actually fell out of the same thing, which was frustration with the way that D&D was being dominated and was being run. And I think the Forge and all of the indie stuff that came out of that was, in many ways, a reaction to like bad GMs, which and
that's
DMs,
really
which,
interesting. Yeah,
which turned into codified GM advice in like Apocalypse World, and everything that came from there. There's this like, here's how to run the damn game. Here's a, you know, not just rules for combat, but rules for actually plotting scenes and having fronts and all those sorts of things.
Well, what's the chronology of that then? Because like, there was third edition, which everybody said was rubbish, and then 3.5e, which like some people really liked, and then there's fourth edition, and suddenly half of the grognards are saying, oh, we hate this game.
Yep.
The indie players are like, this is really cool. You know, this is Dungeons and Dragons, but not as we know it. And that's interesting. So your reactions to that were either, let's make Pathfinder, so it's more like 3.5, or are they, let's pour our energy into the OSR, let's pour our energy into the Forge. So that's kind of an interesting way to look at how Wizards of the Coast drove
that. They did. And the OGL was a huge part of that, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Them turning off that D20 powered systems, you know, it forced the development of Pathfinder when 4E came out and all that sort of stuff. But the OGL still being a thing for the older systems, it let the OSR run wild. So Swords and Wizardry popped up. So OSC is now like the gold standard for retro clones in the OSR space. That's another British game, by the way. Even the American rules.
Castles and Crusades as well.
You know what? Castles and Crusades is one of the very early kind of frustrations with the way D&D was. It and Basic Fantasy and Oz are the ones that most people point to say these are the first games that were like, you know, there's a different way to play these games. We can simplify these. We can make them more about some of the original themes and not all about grand plots with characters that are impossible to kill kind of thing. Right?
yeah. Thinking of fourth edition there. Very much.
Yep.
I ask people about the OSR because I don't know anything about it. It's not a scene that I'm interested in. Well, no, I am interested in following it. It's not a scene that I'm in any way embedded in. And like it's quite an important movement. And like I talk to people like Tony Vazinda, who's kind of into the edge of that scene, you know, who is making cool games like Through the Void and Down We Go and doing all those fun systems. And I think I don't know anything about it. It's kind of good to get that.
Yeah, and you know, and that's just my personal take. The OSR is famous for people arguing over even what the definition is and what's OSR and what's not, right? I tend to look at some,
do you know what? Story games are exactly the same.
Yeah, that's true. They are. They remain that so to this day. I often look at like Neo OSR, Nouveau OSR, or OSR adjacent, you know, whatever you want to call it. That's the stuff that most interests me, for sure. And to be clear, the OSR has had some really problematic personalities and actors, bad actors that have been sort of littered throughout.
Yes.
So there was some really tough sort of, I don't know, there's some bad content and some all sorts of stuff you have kind of have to get your head around. But if you stand back from it and you look at the whole body of the content, it's just overwhelmingly positive and creative at this point. I would advise anybody who's got a real interest in sort of where role-playing games are going generally and who are interested in sort of the industry part of it and the evolution of the, you know, the art of the whole thing, the OSR just has incredible creativity brewing. You can't even begin to keep up with it right now. It's really cool.
Well, I'm going to be mining the content of this conversation for people to get in touch with.
Already.
Watch this space, or listen to this space even.
Sounds good.
Harrigan, I know you're not much of an online person, but we can find you at Talon Keeper. We can find you at Gamers Plane.
Discord is the place where I spend most of my time online, right? When I was so into the play-by-post games for so long and not playing live and whatnot, I kind of ignored a lot of stuff. I actually missed big chunks of The Forge. I missed big chunks of Google+. So now that I'm sort of more plugged back into the gaming industry more widely, Discord is where I found the most engagement by far. So I'm actually pretty involved in the Gaming and BS Discord, the Tavern Keeper Discord, the Gamers Playing Discord. You know, all of those sites we've talked about, they all have a Discord behind them now to enable this sort of much more real-time, much more community-based stuff. So that's where to look for me.
So if people want to meet you, that's where to look.
For sure.
Fantastic. And I guess all that remains for me to say is thank you very much for coming on Yes Indeed Pod, and I will see you at Gamers Plane. That is a threat.
See you there.
Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Harrigan for the interview. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Over the next 2 months, I'm talking to 4 people from the RPG LATAM scene, a massive and important scene of South and Central American creators. In addition to designers, we're also talking to translators and other content creators. It's going to be a blast, so tune in 2 weeks to find out more. This week's episode has been kindly sponsored by James M. Hewitt from Needy Cat Games. James spends most of his time designing board games, but he's also really passionate about fun little indie RPGs. If you go to needycatgames.itch.io, you'll find Vampire Suck at Shopping, a low-prep 2-page RPG about a group of ancient, powerful vampires facing a very mundane task in a modern-day setting. It's guaranteed 100% legally distinct from what we do in the shadows. You can find more links at linktree.com/needycat. If you do play Vampire Suck at Shopping, please tag James M. Hewitt from Needy Cat Games and let him know, because it always makes his day. This week, to pick up the slack from last month, I'd like to thank all of my incredible Patreon supporters. Hesan Yongdi, Sam Armstrong, Beyond Cataclysm Games, Georgie Batts, Sam Lay, Jack Blair, Peter Eich, Audrey Shankle, Patrick Buchner, Thomas Elliott, Carl Rigney, Dono McCarthy, Craig Duthie, and Dale Blackburn. Thank you all so much. We couldn't do what we do without you. And you, yes you, can get a regular shout out and joyful thanks too if you go to patreon.com/yesindeedpod and sign up today. You'll get access to our Discord server where we can hang out and chat and even join monthly editing streams and the Yes Indeed Pod book club. Most of the money goes directly to creators rather than to me, so you'll be investing directly in the indie scene, helping to make it a healthy and inclusive place for years to come. And if you can't commit regularly, you can always help out by rating and reviewing the show wherever you find your podcasts, or by donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at yesindeedpod That's YESINDIEDPOD. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is taken from Be Quiet from Yatzar, from the Free Music Archive, released under Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 International License. Thanks, Yatzar. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.